Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Morning Lineup podcast from the 2017 World Series between the Dodgers and Astros at Dodger Stadium. I'm Anthony Kastrins. I'm joined by Richard Justice. We are here. Dodgers and Astros, 200-win teams, Richard. First time since 1970 that two 100-win ball clubs have made it to the stage. They both had that lull in the second half, but boy, they woke up in a big way in October.
Yeah, and I think there were stretches in the season for both teams where you said, they can't be this good. It was like everything that could go right went right, and then they both had periods where things looked like they were coming undone, coming unravel, but they both got back to where they wanted to be at the right time. Yeah, and I think, like, I don't know how you look at it, but I think it's a very even World Series, and it could be a great one.
I think so, too, absolutely. I mean, both these clubs, the depth of the lineups, the depth of the rosters in general, but you know, the way they see pitches, they don't strike themselves out of innings and stuff of that nature. So, I think it's going to be a great World Series. And, you know, two teams that we talked about the lull in the second half, but they both augmented their ball clubs. Justin Verlander, the Astros, Yu Darvish to the Dodgers. But here in Game 1, two homegrown aces, Dallas Keuchel going against Clayton Kershaw.
You know, and I really think Dallas Keuchel is the key to the World Series in that I feel like I know what I'm going to get out of Justin Verlander. I sort of feel like the Astros know what they're going to get out of Lance McCullers. Maybe a little bit less certain about Charlie Morton, but they need Keuchel to be good. If they can go in and get a game here, get two great performances out of Keuchel today, Keuchel in Game 1, Verlander in Game 2, I think they got a chance to take control of the series. You know, then the question comes, how do you get those five or six last outs? The difference in the bullpens is stark.
It is. That's the one area where I see maybe a clear advantage. You never know with bullpens.
Right.
Though. So, but yeah, the Dodgers were just phenomenal in the first two rounds of these playoffs. And it was something that for them, I mean, just to show you how quick this thing can change, for them, the setup situation was a question mark going into October. They were having a lot of trouble getting that bridge to Kenley Jansen late in the season. And then all of a sudden, in these first two rounds, Kenta Maeda is an uber reliever all of a sudden. You know, Brandon Morrow.
And Granny and Watson and Morrow. You know, conversely, this is who the Astros thought they would be in terms of the bullpen. A.J. Hinch groomed Joe Musgrove, turned him from a back-of-the-rotation starter to a dominant reliever. Chris Devinsky was an all-star reliever. Will Harris was an all-star reliever last year. And they groomed all those guys to go multiple innings. And then they all struggled in October. So I think, you know, if A.J. Hinch has a two-run lead in the seventh or eighth, I don't know that he knows what he's going to do. I guess you try to play the matchups right down through to get the last out or to get the ball in your closer's hands.
Well, if they're going to have that lead, they got to get it off Kershaw. You know, we spent his whole October career has been muddied by a few bad innings that got away from him, and that's kind of become part of his legacy now, for better or worse. But, you know, he can change that narrative in a big way. I think he did already, you know, with his performance in Game 5 in the NLCS round. But this is such an important start for him. Obviously, it's Game 1 of the World Series, but you just think about a guy who's a homegrown, you know, best pitcher of his generation, in my opinion. And he was saying today how he's heard about 1988 since the day he got here to the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. He wants people to talk about 2017 now.
Yeah, I mean, 1988, we've heard that a lot. You know, I grew up a Dodger and, you know, got drafted by the Dodgers. And I didn't know a ton of Dodger history at the time, but, you know, coming up, you kind of gets ingrained in you, which is a good thing. There's not a lot of organizations that have the type of history that the Dodgers do. So it's been a pretty special thing, and I hope after this week's over, they can start talking about 2017 a little bit more and 1988 a lot less. But yeah, my faith's very important to me, and that's you know, number one reason I'm here.
It's the only missing line in his resume. He already has Hall of Fame statistics. I saw his first game in spring training, and a friend of mine said, "Hey, come down here and watch him warm up." Every pitcher on the Dodger staff came to watch Clayton warm up, and the guy pointed and says, "Yeah, that's true respect." And that, I think that's the esteem he's held in around the game. But this is the line, you know, until you win a championship, until you dominate a postseason run, you know, you're looked at differently.
And you see Dallas Keuchel a lot. You're based in Houston, Richard. You know, he won the Cy Young in 2015, had a difficult season the following year in 2016. This year he was on a roll. It looked like a potential Cy Young winner again this year before the injury set in, the neck issue. So, you know, his readiness for this moment, this stage, what do you glean from him?
I think he's in midseason form. You know, he had one great postseason start in the last round, one that wasn't as great. And what he said he learned last year is, I'm not very good when I'm not healthy. And he tried to pitch through an injury this year, They basically made him sit out. And when he came back, he said, "I felt like I was as good as I have ever been." That's the guy they need him to be. You know, for people who haven't seen him pitch before, he keeps everything in the lower third of the strike zone, gets ground ball after ground ball. It's really an art to how he does it. You know, he said the one thing, he's never thrown hard. But from the moment when he was in high school in Tulsa, he could always put the ball where he wanted to put it and change speeds. And that's two-thirds of pitching, right?
I think there's some positive nerves in there, and just because we're playing for a city that's had a lot go on this year, and that's the main reason why. But when you get to this point, there's only two teams left, and you're the best team in the American League. It's a good feeling. So a lot of smiles today, a lot of carefree attitudes, and hoping to go into game one and steal one of two, or, you know, play some good ball here.
All right, so we know who's starting for the Astros. It's, of course, Dallas Keuchel. But we alluded to this earlier, Richard. Who's going to finish the game for them? It was an issue, no doubt, in that series, particularly in the Bronx, in the ALCS. And then Lance McCullers came out and you know, curveball-heavy repertoire, to say the least, to close it out in game seven. What are your expectations for that role?
My expectations are the best laid plans haven't come through. You know, he groomed Will Harris, Chris Devinsky, and Joe Musgrove to pitch multiple innings. All at various times have been dominant. Harris an all-star last year, Devinsky this year. Musgrove was great in the second half. But it's clear that A.J. Hinch does not trust them in October. And I think you could see anything. You know, if you've got a lead and you feel you can win a game of the World Series, one of the four games you need to win, he might go back to the starter. He might go to Brad Peacock, Liriano for Nelson, Francisco Liriano for one guy. Ultimately, though, at some point he's going to have to go back to Harris, Musgrove, and Devinsky to try to get the ball into Ken Giles' hands. And I think, you know, it's going to be batter by batter, you know, because it's obvious that they are not now who they were then, but they've had a couple of days off. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily expect this to happen. You know, McCullers is a starter for them. AJ right. said that in the press conference at the workout day that, you know, likely Charlie Morton and Lance McCullers rounding out the rotation behind Keuchel and Verlander. But boy, there's got to be some temptation with what we saw from McCullers the other night.
Yeah, and I think the first two games you play it straight. Okay, then when you get into you're playing for your life, for your season to continue, you'll do anything. And I think we've seen that through the whole postseason is managers do things that you would never do before, you know. Started with your guy Terry Francona last year, and like, we're going to bring Andrew Miller in whenever we need him, and we'll worry about tomorrow.
And the Dodgers bullpen is a little more straightforward, but, you know, Kenley Jansen – using him in multiple innings is something Dave Roberts hasn't been afraid to do in this postseason.
Yeah, and, you know, if we'd had this conversation 2 months ago, we would look at it probably just the opposite, that the Dodgers were the ones with the questions. But they acquire Cingrani, and they acquire Watson, Morrow steps up, and Maeda has become a weapon in the bullpen. So, I mean, I'm sure the Dodgers feel if we get through into the sixth with a lead, we're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I think Maeda is kind of one of the biggest X factors this October.
He's accepted it, you know?
Yeah.
It's amazing. He's accepted it. He's learned the warm-up routine, everything. I mean, people just don't realize what an adjustment is, but I think mentally it's the biggest deal. Here's how you can help us win a championship.
Yeah, that was the big question late in the year. It appeared that maybe Alex Wood would head the bullpen for them, and so that was Maeda. And, he's been phenomenal. So that Dodgers bridge is very strong. And it was, as we said earlier, that might be the one area where you see a clear edge, and that might be an area where the Dodgers benefit from the 4 days of rest.
Now, do you think that, though, you do have to play it straight at some point, that A.J. Hinch is going to have to manage a game the way he managed it in June? That would be Devinsky, Harris, Musgrove, in some order, Liriano for one left-handed hitter to put the ball in Giles' hands. Or do you start managing right off like your hair's on fire?
Well, you can do that in this environment, of course, you know, with the built-in off days, you know, but what I see a lot of times on this stage is maybe guys getting a little too creative for their own good. Maeda is more the exception than the rule when it comes to a starter transitioning well to the bullpen. And we mentioned McCullers earlier did it in one inning. I don't know if it's something you want to go to frequently or not. I said it might be a point of temptation. But you're right, Richard. I think that it's really hard to win a championship without you know, having some sense of normalcy, like you just alluded to, the things that got you here to this point, the things that got you to 101 wins in the first place, if you're the Astros. And Chris Devenski, you know, he's had a really rough October. That guy was nails for them for much of the season. And he was kind of taking over that Andrew Miller-type role of the multi-innings of high-leverage relief.
Yeah, and you can see it. When he's at his best, he's throwing 94 and 84. The changeup coming out of his hand looks exactly like the fastball, and he just ties hitters in knots. But what he also does is he stalks around the mound. There's a certain bravado to the way he pitches. And when that bravado's not there, and it hasn't been there lately, you go, whoa, you've got to start back yelling at people, whether you feel it in your heart or not, because that's who you are. You're at your best when you have a certain persona on the mound. That's how you've succeeded.
You know, for me, one thing about this particular matchup in this World Series, and we're talking about bullpen moves and strategy and whatnot, one thing you can feel comfortable in is that whatever move is made, it was well thought out in advance. You know, there was some stat or no. It's not just right on right or left on left. It's this kind of pitch against this kind of hitter. This stuff is extremely well formulated by these two front offices.
Yeah, you know, and there was a time 15 years ago where the best managers, La Russa, Leland, they scripted games in their heads. But in their heads, what you have now is with all the data that they actually play the game. I mean, you know, I mean, they tell relievers beforehand. A.J. Hinch told one of his guys, hey, Brett Gardner, oh, Dallas Keuchel, hey, in game seven, Brett Gardner's your guy. If he comes up in the right situation, the game is played before the game is played. It's not always won before it's played.
Well, if it works out in reality the way it works out in your head, you're on another level. But some of these managers are, and these two guys. I mean, one thing that strikes me about Hinch and Roberts is the communication, like you just alluded to. You know, having that plan formulated, expressing it to the players, getting the players on board with it. And that's easier said than done. And both these clubs have really deep lineups as well. So there's a lot of these conversations that take place over the course of the year.
Before game seven of the ALCS, Charlie Morton was the starter for the Astros. A.J. Hinch went to Lance McCullers and goes, at some point tonight or tomorrow night, I'm going to give you the baseball, and you're not going to give it back to me. And that's that's how it went. 5 from Morton, 4 from McCullers. Let's go celebrate.
Dave Roberts and A.J. Hinch aligned in their thought process, their communication, but these guys are playing aligned. They're buddies. They go back a ways.
Yeah, a long ways. A.J. Hinch was the assistant general manager with the Padres. Dave was one of the coaches, and they bonded. They bonded over they're both from the Pac-10. One played at UCLA, one played at Stanford, and they just have a voracious love of the game and began talking. They text all the time, and they talk regularly, and these are the two guys they're closest to in the game.
So let's hear from them on their feelings.
We became friends. We worked together with the Padres in San Diego, and he was in the front office, I think, director of scouting, and I was a coach, and we just kind of hit it off, and obviously we were contemporaries and had mutual friends and just loved talking about the game. And so still have mutual friends, obviously, in the game now. And so to be managing against them now in this situation, it's really surreal. I think after we advanced, he reached out to me. And then after they advanced, I reached out to him. And then from that point on, it's been a radio silence.
We're not friends this week. We're mortal enemies. Dave Roberts and I have known each other a long time, dating back to college. We both were in the PAC. He was at UCLA. I was at Stanford. We played in the same era, albeit in different leagues. I did not steal a base in any sort of important game, so he's got that on me. Over the years, I've gotten to know him a lot better. Our families are our friends. We shared a breakfast in July where we both kind of rooted each other on that we would meet here in October and fight out for the World Series.
They share a love of people. Their families are close. It's just two guys that bonded. And I would think, you know, it's like when Leland and La Russa managed against each other. I don't care who you are, you want to beat the other guy. Well, I'm sure they want to beat the other guy, but it's a different feeling when he's one of your best friends.
Well, the biggest question mark for the Dodgers prior to game one was, will Corey Seager be involved in this roster? He was, of course, held off the NLCS roster because of a bum back suffered in the clincher against the D-backs in the division series. But manager Dave Roberts is entirely optimistic that Corey Seager will be a part of things.
Yeah, they're going to put him through all kinds of workouts and make sure he feels good that he can go out and play shortstop. I think Corey expects to play. And, you know, it's impressive. The Dodgers just blew past the Cubs, and they didn't have one of the five or six best players in the National League. I mean, really a cornerstone-type player. That's the way we looked at the Dodgers this year. For half the season or three-quarters of the season, what's your National League MVP ballot? Well, it's Rendon, it's Stanton, and it's all Dodgers, you know, and Seager being the first among all those guys with Turner and Bellinger and Taylor and all those guys. But he's really important, and he makes them better. And for them to just make the NLCS look easy without him is pretty impressive.
Here's what Dave Roberts had to say about Corey Seager's status.
Obviously, you've got to trust the player, but we also have to trust our eyes and the medical staff. And Corey's going to do everything he can to lobby to be active and play in the World Series. And I know that. He knows that. So to have Charlie Culberson and some other guys that we know that can play short if something does go south on us, we're definitely cognizant of that. But to have the DH potential also, because I think that from the training staff, swinging the bat really doesn't pose a problem. It's more of the bending over. So he's going to take aggressive ground balls today, and we're going to put eyes on him again. And knowing we still don't have to make that decision till tomorrow morning. But unless something really unforeseen happens, I just don't see how he won't be active for us. But it is nice, though, that we have the depth that we have.
Seager's ability to swing the bat is not in question. What do you expect for him when this series shifts to Houston? You expect him to see him at DH?
Yeah, that's what Dave Roberts said. Pretty much seemed to announce that swinging the bat is no issue with the back. It's how much he can play shortstop, how well he can move and twist and bend and do the athletic things he has to do. So I would think, I guess we'll see how he comes out of games one and two, but I would think the middle three games he will definitely DH. You know, I guess it depends on how he feels, though.
Let's hear from Mr. Seager himself. He worked very hard to get back to this point of joining the Dodgers in the World Series.
I've checked all the boxes that I need to check to feel like I need to play, so I'm looking forward to tomorrow. This great culture, this community, this team has been deprived for a long time. Everybody wants that. Everybody strives to get there and to finally be here. It's really special. It really is for us. It's for the fans, for everybody that's involved with the Dodgers.
Well, managers are used to feeling the heat, Richard, but I think we're all going to be feeling the heat in game one. Forecast says, last I saw...
That was clever.
Thank you very much. Last I saw, it had actually cooled. The forecast had gone from 100 to 99.
Well, it's a dry heat.
It's a dry heat. And it'll still be a record. Now, I don't remember if the record in 2001... It was in Arizona, of course. I don't know if the roof was – I'm assuming the roof was
closed.
They
opened the panels in center field.
Okay.
So I guess technically it was a little bit close. But I think I saw John Thorne, the baseball historian, said there's only been like five games where it's been hotter than 80 degrees since 1975, something like that.
And yeah.
Three of those were in Oakland, of all places. Hmm. So it's going to be hot. But it is going to be dry. And one of the things – that managers do now is manage rest. You know, we've seen that in recent years, started with Joe Maddon, get guys off their feet. We don't want them on the field. Guys come in and start hitting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so why have them take another round of batting practice in the cage? And also, the sun's going to go down at an hour and a half into the game, and then it's going to be Southern California weather.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think this is fun trivia, but, you know, having experienced it on the workout day and you step outside and you want to die. I mean, it's oppressive heat. It just suffocates right. You. But then, you know, you get to once the shadows creep over Dodger Stadium, it's a whole different ballgame.
Now, the players did say, though, Justin Turner specifically said this, it can affect the game,
yeah.
That when it's warm here, the ball flies out. So the boys might want to keep the ball low in the first couple innings until the sun sets.
I'm just glad we have a safe weather series. As a reporter, as a fan, you want things to go in order. You don't want another 17-minute rain delay in a game seven in the 10th inning.
Right.
Like we had last night. Or
although
last
there was,
year.
A, you know, last year, though, there was a certain beauty of that. And it's part of the charm of the 2016 World Series. Was the rainstorm allowed the Cubs to reset and all that. But you're right.
You try ushering that theory in Cleveland.
And remember when we were leaving the press box at 3:20 in the morning? Yeah. It was so charming.
It was very charming. I was charmed. All right. Well, we've covered all the bases for Game 1. Thank you, Richard Justice. This has been the Morning Lineup Podcast. Be sure to tune in to Game 1 of the World Series at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox. And we will be back each day to recap each game of the World Series. Thanks for tuning in.